It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Since 2013, Ukraine has descended into a state of unrest and instability marked by violence, the annexation of Crimea by Russian forces, and a tense geopolitical standoff between Moscow and the West. With the future of Ukraine teetering on the brink, the World Affairs Council of Pittsburgh has brought one of the world's foremost authorities on U.S.-Russia affairs, Angela Stent, to town. Ms. Stent served as an advisor on Russia under Presidents Bill Clinton and George W. Bush and is the author of the book, The Limits of Partnership, U.S.-Russian Relations in the 21st Century. She is also professor of government and director of Eurasian, Russian, and East European Studies at Georgetown University and senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. She joins us now in Studio A. Angela Stent, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Good to be on your show.
Pittsburgh has a relatively high number of people of Ukrainian descent, so people have been following the developments there pretty closely. And as some of our listeners may know, Pittsburgh has a sister city in eastern Ukraine, the city of Donetsk. Let's start by talking about the situation there. What can you tell us?
Well, Donetsk has been under the control of these various sort of separatist groups that have taken over all the municipal buildings. The city has really come to a stop. There isn't just one group. It's not always clear who's in charge. There are different people who say they're in charge. So these are armed militias. They say that they don't want to be part of Ukraine anymore, that they would like to be either independent, and in fact they had their own referendum recently where they said they wanted to be independent, which Russia has not recognized yet. And ideally, they'd like to be part of Russia. So right now, it's a very tense situation there. I spoke to a journalist when I was in Moscow a couple of weeks ago who had just come back from Donetsk. And you also have groups of fighters from Chechnya. These are very well armed. These are very fierce fighters. So they've come to join these separatists, and they're fighting the Ukrainian army that's trying to reimpose order there. Yesterday, a number of the leaders from Donetsk were in Moscow asking for humanitarian assistance. So it's very uncertain how this is going to go forward.
They were in Moscow asking for humanitarian assistance. And what was the response?
Well, the Russians have in the beginning denied that there were Russians there. Now they said, actually, there are some Russians there. We know, again, apparently, if you go to Donetsk and you talk to these separatists, most of them, in fact, have Russian passports. So the Russians have said they want to assist them with humanitarian assistance. The Russians have insisted that if there's going to be a solution to the problem in Ukraine, the new president of Ukraine, Mr. Poroshenko, has to sit down with these separatists. But then the question is, who represents them? We hear that one of the leaders in Donetsk was arrested by another leader a few days ago and has disappeared. So they don't really have a clear leader either.
But clearly the Russians are manipulating this situation, if not just outright propping these militias up.
I think we have to be careful because, again, we're operating in a gray zone. The Russians clearly have influence. I'm not sure that if Mr. Putin picked up the telephone tomorrow and said to all of these disparate groups in that region, stand down, vacate the buildings, let the Ukrainians take over, they probably wouldn't. Clearly, Russia has influence. But I think if we think that Russia controls them, we're probably misunderstanding the complexity there.
If you'd like to join our conversation with Angela Stent, our number is 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh, hashtag EPLive. Once again, the number 412-246-2002. Let's widen the aperture and look at the U.S.-Russia relations. They seem pretty chilly at the moment. Putin and Obama just crossed paths in France commemorating D-Day, but French President Francois Hollande had to arrange separate dinners for the two of them. What is the state of the relationship?
Well, I would say the relationship is the worst it's been since the collapse of the Soviet Union. And actually, the U.S.-Soviet relationship under Gorbachev was in many ways better than the U.S.-Russian relationship now. Mr. Obama had a successful first term, a reset policy, where he interacted with the then president, Dmitry Medvedev, even though we know that Putin was calling the shots there. Once Mr. Putin came back to the Kremlin, the relationship deteriorated quite rapidly. for various reasons. And I think the last straw for the White House and for Mr. Obama was when Russia granted Edward Snowden asylum. The NSA leaker, they gave him temporary political asylum after the White House had asked numerous times for them not to do that. And moreover, just recently, Putin gave a big press conference where he had Edward Snowden ask the question, clearly planted, "Oh, Mr. Putin, tell us, do you listen to your citizens' telephone conversations? Do you bug their offices and their computers?" And of course, Mr. Putin, with a straight face, said he didn't.
Of course he
doesn't. This was the break. And it was after that that President Obama canceled his summit with President Putin last September, even before the events in Ukraine. And at that time, President Obama described President Putin as reminding him of a bored schoolboy slouching in the back of the classroom. So that's at the level of rhetoric that we now are.
Right. And so is Putin the problem? Because it seems we got downright chummy with Gorbachev and Yeltsin. He was like Uncle Boris, you know, the guy you want to go to Russia and have a drink with. And then along comes Putin. And that seems to be the point at which the tension has ratcheted up.
Well, the leaders are disproportionately important in this relationship because we don't have a lot of other people who are really involved in it. You know, unlike with China, we don't do a lot of business with Russia. We don't have a lot of business contacts there. So when the relationship works, then things are much better. As you say, President Clinton, President Yeltsin. Don't forget President Bush and President Putin. In the beginning, when President Bush looked into his eyes and saw his soul, and when we worked together in the beginning stages of the war in Afghanistan. But now, and then the Obama Medvedev relationship that was good. But now that is the problem. The problem is the personal relationship. Obviously, there are also big differences in terms of what U.S. interests and Russian interests are. And even if someone else were in the Kremlin, we would clearly have differences and disagreements. But I think it makes it harder to get anything done when you have, as you said, our president talked for 15 minutes to Mr. Putin on the sidelines of this Normandy celebrations, commemorations. But there's no chance that they're going to meet for any length of time in the near future.
Would love to have been a fly on the wall for that conversation. We are talking with Angela Stent. She is the author of the book, The Limits of Partnership, U.S.-Russian Relations in the 21st Century. And she served as an advisor on Russia under Presidents Bill Clinton and George W. Bush. I'm imagining a conversation, and I'm going to think that it might have happened, say, I'm assuming you got to talk directly to the presidents?
Or to people around them, too.
Yeah. Okay, right. I'm sure that, you know, their time is limited. But on those occasions, for example, with George W. Bush, you know, he talked about the meeting he had with Putin where he looked into his soul and it seemed to, you know, indicate that I understand this man. We're gonna figure out a way to get along and iron out our differences. And then, you know, before W. left office, it all kind of went terribly wrong. Mm-hmm. It did go terribly wrong. Did he come to you at some point and say, you know, Angela, what I just don't know how to read this man. What can you tell me? Because I don't know where to go from here.
Well, I think what's clear is, you know, the first meeting that he had with President Putin, which was before the 9/11 attacks, they had a good chemistry. They talked about religion. They talked about a number of other things. And then after 9/11, President Putin came to the United States. He visited the ranch in Crawford, Texas. They were allies. And for the Russians, they thought this was like the World War II coalition. We have a common enemy, terrorism. The problem was that the expectations were very, very different. And that what Putin wanted from this relationship, this new partnership with the United States, was really a recognition of Russia's right to its own sphere of influence in countries like Ukraine. And from the Bush administration's point of view, they thought, we're helping the Russians by cleaning up this problem in their backyard, i.e. Afghanistan. And so at some point, couple of years after that, there certainly then became real questions in the White House. And they were shared, particularly, you know, President Bush had a close relationship with Prime Minister Tony Blair. And together, they started to talk about the fact, maybe we have misunderstood Putin, or we thought that he was someone whom he wasn't. And so those conversations about, well, who is he really and why is he behaving like this, they started, you know, even before the outbreak of the war in Iraq. And then, of course, it went downhill after that.
Did any questions come directly to you?
Well, the kind of questions you get are, you know, have more to do with what you think a leader's intentions are. Why are they doing this? It's less about what their character is and more about really what their policy, what's motivating them.
And I don't know how much of this you can divulge, but I would love to hear, and I'm guessing our listeners would love to hear maybe a scenario. If, in fact, George W. Bush was thrown by how Putin acted years after 9/11, when it was thought that, hey, you know, we're buddies here. If he was thrown by something Putin was doing, did a question of some kind come to you, or did he maybe even ask you directly, help me to understand what's going on here and why he's behaving this way?
Oh, I mean, there are lots of questions like that, and they were coming all the time. You know, what do you, you know, why do you think this is happening? And then what do you think? I mean, in things like the run-up, to the Iraq war, what was Russia going to do? I mean, in the end, of course, Russia joined with the French and the Germans in criticizing the United States. During the Orange Revolution, I served in government. That's 10 years ago when they had the first, revolution in Ukraine. And then there were real questions at that point whether Russia was going to intervene militarily, because the Russians were supporting Mr. Yanukovych, who then subsequently became president and has now fled. So all the time, there's always the question of the intentions, and it's not only of the leader himself, of the president, but what about the Russian military? You know, what were their views? What are the views of other people? So Russia is a very hard country to understand, particularly since Mr. Putin came back to power in the Yeltsin era. People were more open. So it's always trying to open that black box and understand what's going on inside it.
It seems as though each president who has come into office since the end of the Cold War has wanted to improve relations with his counterpart in the Kremlin, and much was made of Obama's reset. In your book, you say that actually four resets have taken place, and each one has been a disappointment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the first one, the shortest one under President George H.W. Bush, was somewhat more successful because it was very limited and it only focused on nuclear issues. Under President Clinton, it started very well. He did have this – you seem to have a very close personal relationship with President Yeltsin. But then the wars in the Balkans, all of those things really complicated the relationship. And by the time at the end of the Yeltsin administration, when Mr. Yeltsin was quite sick, that ended badly. And of course, the same thing happened with George W. Bush. And I would say the first Obama term, it did work because it was conducted very much with President Medvedev and because there were limited goals, nuclear arms treaty agreements on tougher sanctions on Iran, having the Northern Distribution Network to transport goods and people out of Afghanistan. On all of those issues, we were working together with the Russians. But certainly, it's been a great disappointment since Mr. Putin came back and since the U.S. has been blamed for all of these other issues.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA, and my guest is Angela Stent. She served as an advisor on Russia under Presidents Bill Clinton and George W. Bush and is author of the book The Limits of Partnership, U.S.-Russian Relations in the 21st Century. In the book, you call for a fundamental reassessment of the principles and practices mm-hmm. that drive U.S.-Russian relations. How do you see the path forward for both countries?
Well, I think at the moment it's clear that in terms of the bilateral agenda, U.S.-Russia, there's really going to be nothing on the agenda for the rest of the Obama administration because of all the issues that have happened and because of the situation in Ukraine. We've now sanctioned a lot of Russians. But we will still be working with Russia on multilateral issues like Iran's nuclear program, North Korea's nuclear program, and the situation in Afghanistan post-2014, Syria's chemical weapons, and the Arctic, for instance, which is an area where we're working together. So there are a number of multilateral issues where we'll continue to work. I think from the U.S. point of view, it's very important to be quite realistic about the extent to which Russia is going to change, particularly as long as Mr. Putin is president. And I think it would probably make more sense to look at Russia more or less like we do with China. This is a big, important country, China, for instance, has a very different political system, isn't going to become like us, but we work together where we have common interests. And I think if we had that attitude towards Russia and we didn't keep expecting that maybe there is some golden key that we can find to unlock a better relationship, and because after all, the Russians sort of are more like us and they're going to become like us, if we accept that that's really not on the cards for a long time, then I think you have lowered expectations and you're less likely to be disappointed.
I've heard it said that the Russians are the people that we as Americans can and should be able to relate to. They wear suits and ties. They go to the opera and the ballet just like we do. So culturally, were quite similar, and yet there's been more tension. I mean, that's been more in the news than the terrorism proliferating in the Middle East and in, you know, places like Iraq most recently and Syria. Is that something that people can – is that always going to be a jumping off point for us? We can always go back to saying, well, hey, we, you know, we all like things, so why can't we just get along?
Well, I think culture is very important. I mean, the Russians have a great culture, music, literature, films, plays, whatever. And I think one of the
– And sports,
And sports, and of course sports. And so one of the abiding ways in which we can and should interact with the Russians – has to do with culture and sports and exchanges on that level, which isn't political. And that's going to continue. I think the mistake is sometimes when you meet Russians and you enjoy and benefit from their great culture to think because we can relate to the culture so well and the sports and we can speak a common language on a number of issues that we share the same view of the world politically. And right now, that really isn't true. And Russia has a very different history than we do. Right now, Mr. Putin, of course, is portraying Russia as the harbinger of conservative values internationally, that it, you know, against the decadent West. I mean, that will probably pass.
But at the end of the day, aren't they really, or isn't Russia just really still a totalitarian country?
It's not a totalitarian country. It is ruled by an authoritarian leader, but people have freedoms that they didn't have, you know, in the Soviet times. It's not a totalitarian country, but there is greater repression, but people have individual freedoms. They can travel. They can still surf the internet more or less unimpeded.
But you can't express yourself freely. I mean, Pussy Riot, you know, they were victimized by some of the things that the ways in which the leaders of Russia are allowed to trample on individual rights.
Well, they certainly can. And of course, in the case of Pussy Riot and a number of other people in the political opposition, they're jailed at the slightest notice. So, of course, they don't have the freedoms that they have in a Western country.
So what should people in Pittsburgh, we have this sister city relationship with Donetsk, and people are concerned about what's happening over there. What can we do for the people of Donetsk? And can we, in the midst of all this tension and turmoil, be able to communicate and freely with people over there?
Well, I think you can try and communicate with people in Donetsk. It's more difficult just because, you know, it's now been taken over by these separatists. I think the most important thing for people in Pittsburgh and for Americans to do is to continue to make the views known to our government, which I think shares them, that we have to support the new government in Kiev. We have to try and support a peaceful solution to this. We have to give Ukraine as much assistance as we can so that the government can function. It can introduce economic reforms. It can, I mean, the people in Donetsk, you know, their standard of living hasn't been good and it's been falling, to help them economically and to try and get beyond the situation where you have these armed militias going around and terrorizing people.
Angela Stent served as an advisor on Russia under Presidents Bill Clinton and George W. Bush, and she is the author of the book, The Limits of Partnership, U.S.-Russian Relations in the 21st Century. She spoke to the World Affairs Council of Pittsburgh yesterday. Angela Stent, thank you so much for being with us on Essential Pittsburgh.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Coming up, a conversation with Pat Denizio, lead singer of The Smithereens. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.